This is Max Q, the podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for working artists in today's world. Multifaceted careers, time management, finances, finding balance between your life and your work. We explore that and more on the Max Q podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Christina Mancier. Today's interview features pianist Melody Kwa, who graduated with her DMA from Peabody in 2017. Melody has built a broad-ranging career as a soloist, collaborative pianist, and educator, performing and teaching across multiple continents. She is dedicated to community-engaged music making, as well as broadening the piano repertoire with compositions by underrepresented composers. Currently, Melody serves as assistant professor of piano at the Penn State School of Music. Melody, thank you so much for speaking with me today. We're so excited to have you on the MaxQ podcast. To get started, if you could tell us what your life looks like right now, that would be great.
Hi, Christina. Thank you so much for inviting me to be on. It's such a pleasure. Life right now looks pretty nice because it is the summertime when we're recording it. So I have a lot more flexibility and a lot more time than I usually do during the year. But on a normal school year, so I'm currently teaching at Penn State University. And I joined the faculty. I got this job right when the pandemic hit. So I started in fall of 2020, and I had gotten the contract through just before the university announced a hiring freeze in March. So it was really a crazy time.
That sounds like really good timing, actually.
Good timing for sure. John, my husband, he also a Peabody alumnus, but both of us were living in Baltimore after graduating. We were working in Baltimore, and we, then moved to State College in the summer of 2020. So this past year has been a lot of kind of transitioning into this life of having a position, a faculty position that's full time, and just figuring out what exactly that entails and what my new responsibilities are, and how do I, really settle into it in a year that was so unusual for everybody. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been a very exciting year, and it's been also stressful in many ways, but all positive things in the end, work wise. But in terms of what my day to day looks like when school is in session, I didn't realize how much emailing I would have to do as part of it, but
there's always many emails, right?
yeah, exactly. The teaching portion, I also teach a piano literature class. And there are four different classes on a 2-year rotation. So I'll be, using the next month or so to prepare for this coming fall semester. Anyway, so that keeps me on my toes, having a class to teach as well. And then just kind of getting to know the institutional infrastructure of the university, mm-hmm. and who to ask for things and what goes where and what forms have to be filled by when, those kinds of things.
Yeah. I'm curious how this job works with your performance side. And do you still perform? Obviously, that's maybe a different story with the pandemic as well. But how have you kind of crossed the performance and the teaching pieces, and how do you see them benefiting each other?
Yeah, so, part of many university positions include this expectation that you're going to maintain a performing a platform. And So that's part of my position as well, is that I've got this teaching portion of it. My creative activity is, you know, what they consider the performance element as well. But that could be research, that could be presentations, that could be other things as well. And then service to the university. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a given that, you know, you're not just teaching every week, but you're also playing and using those opportunities also to get to know the community, get to know the students and recruit and all of those things. So, well, yeah, this past year has been unusual in that sense that I'm in a new place. You know, I'm still kind of getting to know who are the folks around the area, who are my colleagues, actually. We've got a pretty big department, and most people were still teaching online, so I haven't met actually a lot of the faculty and staff in person yet. But we have been able to perform in our recital space and have that be live streamed. So we definitely have had, you know, opportunities to connect in that way. They started, Penn State started a new faculty series called Together Alone, where they're just solo performances that adhered to the 30-minute time limit that we had in each space. So one of the university's rules during the pandemic was, it wasn't really the university, but the School of Music specifically, 30 minutes in one room, and then you have to leave for 30 minutes for it to ventilate, 30 minutes on and off, so all of that. So they were just short concerts that the faculty would put on. But I did get to collaborate with the cello professor, Kim Cook, in a local concert in December. And then, yeah, now things are picking up a little bit more. This coming weekend, Penn State is hosting the Pennsylvania Music Teachers Association Conference, but it's virtual. So in terms of our responsibility for hosting, it's us playing a concert. And
a lot less going on than if it was happening in person, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there's a summer festival in August that I'll be able to play with some of my colleagues for. So I'm excited to, you know, really get to know the area and the people around when we are able to have concerts in person again. Mm-hmm. That will feel very, very different.
Yeah. And what about the administrative elements that you alluded to earlier with your teaching job? What have you found most challenging or surprising about that piece of the work?
Yeah. You know, I consider myself an organized person, and I like that aspect of the job. I think what I realized was that because as faculty, you don't have these 9-to-5 hours, it's really, really easy for work to really consume your waking state. And I remember one evening I was like washing dishes at the sink, and I was feeling really tense. Like my whole body was just all stiff. And I'm like, wow, what's going on here? I'm done with the day. I had a good day in all, you know, estimation. I am making dinner and I'm washing dishes and I'm just being at home. But I think I was waiting in the back of my mind. I was waiting for someone to get back to me about something via email. And it was, I think I was in the middle of organizing a virtual masterclass. And I was getting a little bit worried about, oh, these pieces, what if they don't fit together? And I realized, hang on a moment. Like, my day can't possibly hang, the balance of my day can't possibly hang on an email that I'm waiting on, or the last email I sent. And, you know, kind of I realized I just needed to have a little more detachment in that sense from that aspect of it, because it's, I realized it's never ending. Mm-hmm. You send one off and you complete a task and there's another one that comes mm-hmm. in. And I think, yeah, just realizing that, like truly realizing that.
And how really do you helped. How do you approach creating that separation for yourself? What are the ways yeah. that you kind of take, okay, this is my work life and my work day, and now I might be sitting in the same spot in my house or my apartment, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how do you then like transition into not work yeah. mode?
You know, I think it's not so much that, okay, it's work mode and it's not work mode, but I realized that I can do exactly the same thing and I can, you know, send that after hour email. That's no problem. But it's kind of how am I approaching it before and after that email, you know, or mm-hmm. how am I after that meeting or after that concert? And I think it's something that I can apply. I've found that I can apply not only to that aspect of my life, but to all of these other areas. Like, for example, I don't know, let's just see. It's this masterclass, right, that I was planning. I feel like no amount of worry or anxiety or stress or any of those things really change the outcome of how it goes. It's like you plan it and then you make sure you got all your ducks in a row and then, well, it happens, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I can either approach all of these different events that are, you know, continuous in my life with that, oh, okay, that sort of build up. Oh, and then after it's done, oh, yeah. how did that go? Oh, and then you like, we kind of create this story like, oh, that went that way. And then it just becomes so consuming. And so I think just being like, okay, that went how it is. If I didn't like the way it went, okay, just make changes for next time and then go on. So I think just that approach.
Mm-hmm. It almost sounds like being mindful of like when you're thinking about it and when you're not thinking about it. Is that right?
Totally. Totally.
So I would love to hear how your goals and priorities might have changed between now and maybe starting school, being in school, graduating from school. Are they the same? Are they different? Did it do a 360? Did you have no goals in school? I'm just curious, how was that evolution for you?
Yeah, I would say that in school, they were a lot more narrow. They were a lot more task focused where, I wanted to play that piece in the best possible way I could, or play that recital in the best possible way and, you know, do well in all my classes. And I feel like school kind of gives you this ready-made current that you're flowing in. And so a lot of my goals and priorities were centered around school. And I had been in school for so long. I, you know, did an artist diploma before the DMA as well. So that, you know, extended my time in school as well. And so I think then you sort of realize when you're getting close to graduation that, wait, this current that I'm in is not always going to be there for me. Like, what is my current that I am creating? Like, what exactly is it that I
like that metaphor, the current, like what kind of momentum are you creating for yourself in mm-hmm, that current? Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, like with being a student at Peabody, for example, like I would get all these gigs from the career office, and like I had all of my resources that I could tap into, and you know, just knock on my teacher's door, like you just had it all there. And that's kind of what it's like being a student, period, right? And then when you're close to graduating, or the DIP was a really interesting time because the degree in progress when mm-hmm. you're doing the doctorate, where you're done with all your classes and your lessons, but you're still considered a student, because you haven't graduated yet and you just have your exams and other kind of last projects to finish. And so there, it's like, okay, let's take stock here. And I think, you know, it sometimes then transitions into just making a living, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a time where I had, I think, 4 jobs. I was teaching at a private school in Baltimore. I was doing community college classes and lessons in Baltimore. I was teaching in DC, younger children, just K through 12, mm-hmm. right? Pre-college age. And also church job. So it's like a whirlwind of activity that one creates for themselves and that I'd created for myself. And it's also easy then actually to lose track of what exactly you're trying to do. And for me, it wasn't so much that. It actually was a really great time for me to figure out, because I had the opportunity to teach college-aged kids at the community college, mm-hmm. but then I was also doing the younger pre-college kids, and so it was a great kind of experimental time where I could figure out, oh, what kind of teaching do I enjoy? And mm-hmm. so it was a little bit of like, okay, let me work as hard as I can and make sure financially everything's good, while at the same time it was also quite an experimental and time in a way.
Well, you're able to kind of put into practice these things that you're learning in school and see like how you actually enjoy them in different settings, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. hopefully that helps you figure out what you like to do, and then you can move in the direction of the things that you like to do, which totally. It looks like you have now done, which is great.
Yeah, a really important experience for me was this sabbatical replacement that I had done for a semester at Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania. And it was a really crazy time because I kept all of these jobs and added that sabbatical, which was full time. And so
that sounds like pretty intense.
Yeah, driving to PA, spending a couple of nights there, but then coming back, driving to DC.
Oh, wow.
All kinds of things. And that job really made me realize that I do enjoy teaching. Like, I am doing all these crazy things, but mm-hmm. and I do like academia. Like, it was a real nice taste because it was like, even though I had this ridiculous amount of driving to do, like, I wanted to sit in that meeting and I wanted mm-hmm. to, you know, be part of that world. And so it was quite useful. So sometimes, you know, that that hustle is really quite fruitful because it helps you know what are the things you're interested in. Maybe, you know, you meet people that introduce you to, you know, other kinds of things that one can do as a musician or mm-hmm. or just areas where you might not have been familiar with. So it's hard when you graduate and it's that hustle period, but I think it is an important one in a musician's life.
Yeah, I love that. And I really appreciate the kind of the way you described it as experimental, because I think for many of us it is, because we're still figuring out exactly what we want to do and how we want to do it. And without trying it, I don't know if we ever really know what it's mm-hmm. going to be like. So I think that's great. I guess my next question that I have for you is around how you kind of prepared. I mean, we could talk about performance as well, but I'm curious about the teaching job in particular, since I know that securing a higher ed job can be quite the task, and that's an amazing accomplishment. So how did you prepare for that process? Like, either were there things that you learned in your degree that you found really useful? Were there things that you did or experienced outside your degree that you found really useful? What were the pieces that you found value in that you think helped you kind of take the steps toward getting that job?
You know, when I first started off my DMA, I think my first year, I'm pretty embarrassed to admit, but I didn't know like the difference between like a lecturer versus adjunct. Well, I understood part-time, full-time, but I just was completely unaware of all of these different details and the types of appointments, you know, tenure track versus non-tenure track. I really didn't know much about that. And, you know, when you come, I've had the luxury of attending like amazing, amazing schools, right? Which don't, that weren't quite like not quite part of, how should I say, that had their own different kinds of appointments. You know, I don't really know, like my professor, the faculty at Yale. I think it was,
well, just they're all a little different, I feel like, and there's a lot of very specific language used around it. And
exactly. So I really was not, that was like, I go to my lesson, that's my professor. My professor is my professor. I don't know what kind of, you know, professor they are. It just wasn't on my radar at all. And honestly, the career office at Peabody, and specifically Jerry Klickstein at that time, who was there when I was there, was instrumental in helping me realize that there's more I need to do than just play a good concert. Right, because if you look at job descriptions now, there are, you know, these areas where universities of strength that universities are want to know that you're qualified, you know, that you're able to like sit in committees and recruit. And, you know, show these, yeah, different areas of teaching, creative service and creative activity and service. And so how, it was really quite a puzzle, like, how do you show that you're qualified to do all of that if your sole purpose is to play the best Chopin that you can, right? So I kind of realized that, you know, I was attending talks and kind of starting to broaden my focus a little bit more. You know, you had been asking me how my priorities changed, but just that broadening out and realizing, okay, well, maybe, okay, let's do this. And I applied for Shriver Hall Concert Series, had this junior board director position that was opening up. And I probably wouldn't have applied for it if I wasn't encouraged to, you know, and just like, okay, let's do that. That's a different kind of avenue that I just wouldn't have even thought of to experience. And then a lot of the time I realized that for pianists especially, yeah, it can be so like, let me focus on my playing, let me focus on my huge piece that I need to do, my concerto that I'm learning. But I found it was helpful to also think about research projects that, you know, I was encouraged to submit it for the MTNA presentation, for a conference rather, for this national conference, and it got accepted. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, right, I can continue to add to my experience and add to my higher ability. Is that a word?
I know what you mean. And so you're looking at the ways that you can take your performance and augment the things you're learning in ways that are benefiting not just your performance, but other skills as well. So like the research example, are those things like, are you researching things that you're performing where it kind of crosses both sides?
Yeah, sometimes. But I think like that that realizing that performance is just one aspect of music making, of even when that is your goal and that is your focus. And it's especially hard when we come out of a conservatory system mm-hmm. where that really is the focus. And, you know, that lesson, you know, my weeks, how well or not well my week went mm-hmm. would so many times depend on how my lesson went or how studio class went.
Yeah,
and that's crazy now.
Yeah, I mean, and in some ways it makes sense because you're there to work on your craft, on your instrument, and mm-hmm. being skilled in the instrument you're studying is like the number one, because you're not going to get the performance job or the faculty job if you can't play the instrument. That's the first piece, right?
So,
but then these other things are less tangential than they may seem, is what it sounds like you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it gets harder to experiment and explore these other areas and figure out how you can, you know, add them to your experience once the further and further you get from school, right? Because you're further away from those resources, and it might feel like you're more and more on your own in a sense.
Bringing it back to your performance side, have you felt like these different experiences have helped you as a performer of the music that you're creating? Like, how have the more well-rounded pieces played into mm-hmm. that artistic piece?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think ideally they all work together, right?
Right.
And
in a perfect world, they would all work together.
In a perfect world. Yeah. And I think that's something I am figuring out right now for myself, because I think that would be the most it would make the most sense if what I'm researching and what I'm playing and connects with all my teaching and this and that. And so, well, my most recent project is that I've commissioned these two pieces by Malaysian composers. So I'm Malaysian. I was born in Kuala Lumpur. And I, this 2021 MTNA conference, I presented on these two pieces, right? So that's a nice connection there where the playing and the presenting and whatnot go together. But it is something that I'm planning to continue, this commissioning project, specifically musicians of, you know, of more diverse backgrounds. And mm-hmm. I'm currently thinking of Southeast Asian composers just because of my heritage. And there are a lot of talented musicians in that part of the world that haven't quite, found the, what's the word I'm looking for? Just haven't had as much exposure mm-hmm. to their music hasn't had as much exposure. Yeah.
Sounds like an amazing project.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So that would be, you know, ideal if I focused on that part, learning about that, commissioning, and then playing the music, and then mm-hmm. that would be quite fulfilling for me.
And that's a really clear and tangible example. And I'm sure there are other less tangible examples too of like, I mean, I don't know your experience on the junior board at Shriver. That's something I did as well. I remember being in that experience and saying, oh, so this is how a nonprofit works. And then when I'm applying to a concert series, I'm like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, so this is how they review applications. And so this is how they discuss that process.
And absolutely.
So I think there is a lot of kind of underlying transfer of these things too, that maybe we don't even realize that is happening mm-hmm. in our work, which is kind of cool.
For sure.
Do you have any other advice for current Peabody students?
One thing that I wanted to say, you know, in this process of applying for this job, I think I applied to over 30 5 over the course of like graduation in 2017 and until 2020. And, you know, to your students who are in the process of, you know, contemplating higher education, seeking a position in higher education, it really can feel so soul-sucking, you know, when you apply for a job and you just like don't hear back. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes the further you get, like you get to a final interview and, you know, they say no thanks. And that feels like such a personal affront. It can really feel like that.
And you're investing so much in the process.
Absolutely. But what I was going to say is that there was a job recently that had opened up that two of my really close friends had been finalists for. And they had individually disclosed to me that they were finalists for this position. And I didn't tell them that I knew who one of the other ones were. And they're both truly, I am not exaggerating, really splendid musicians, both very different, like very different style, very different expertise, but both, you know, just top notch musicians. And I remember thinking, right, so it's kind of, it's really what fit is the universe. It's really what the university is looking for. It just kind of gave me a little more perspective. When you get to that stage and when you get rejected, we just naturally take it so personally. But I could see either one of my friends in this position, and truthfully the department would look quite different because they were such different musicians. But then it came down to, you know, what kind of fit, what was the department looking for, and all those things. So it just kind of gave me a perspective that I wish I had a little bit more when I was in the position of looking for jobs and not hearing back and you know, feeling so disappointed many occasion.
That's really good insight, because you're looking at, like, I mean, in some ways, it's not that different than applying for grad schools, I suppose, because you're looking for, like, what is the right fit for the institution? But then again, what is also the right fit for you? And so if that's not a match, then that's going to be a no-go for both sides, right? So,
absolutely.
And it may not have anything to do with ability.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was trying to say. It really may have not. Maybe, but maybe not. And if you've gotten to that level, being a finalist, it probably wasn't it wasn't a note you missed. Let's put it that way.
Thank you so much, Melody. It's been a pleasure. And wishing you the best of luck with your teaching position. And please keep in touch.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure to be here today and talk with you.
You can learn more about Melody on her website, melodyqua.com, and you can learn more about the Penn State School of Music at the link in the podcast notes. To close out our episode, here is a clip of Melody performing Chopin's Scherzo, Opus 54, No. 4. Theme music for the MaxQ podcast, created by Dimitro Nebish.